in the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking that we could pull, I don't know, Hall of Famer. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now, introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now when I buy Slab Packs on Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. There is nothing more fun than opening an Arena Club Slab Pack. I mean, it is so much better than any mystery pack that I've ever purchased because there is a focus on transparency. There is a display of available cards. There are hit rates you can get. When you're graded, you're given a rationale. It is the marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, and displaying. Arena Club Slab Packs are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling. You can have them officially graded by Arena Club. The Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with a full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. Whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have to check out. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/badmoney. Wow, that's a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack, that's $40 right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/badmoney for 10% off your first purchase.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Get your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's Bad with Money with
Gabe S.
Dunn.
Hello and welcome to Bad with Money, a show about finances and feelings where we don't talk down to you. I'm your host, Gabe Dunn. And with me today is Dr. Stephanie Zepeda, kindly wrote in. And do you want to give us like your background and who you are and what you do?
Yeah, for sure. So Dr. Stephanie Zepeda, I am a licensed marriage and family therapist in Texas, and I specialize in couples financial therapy, is I guess what you would call it. Yeah.
What does that mean?
I know, right? So the field of financial therapy is pretty new in the world of approaches to helping people. And it's a little bit confusing, actually. So, and the way that I came across financial therapy was actually from Bad with Money, partially. So Gabe, you can take the credit or blame for getting me into this field. Yeah.
The show has been on long enough to have inspired careers.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I had heard about financial therapy. I graduated in, 2014 with my doctorate in marriage family therapy. And much like what happened after grad school, I was kind of following what my mentors had done and hadn't really found my thing that I was passionate about. I was more following their passion.
Right.
And I'd heard about financial therapy, but for me, I thought it was this thing where it was more financial professionals talking about money and wanting to bring some psychology into it, right? I didn't think that there was a demand or a need or even a space for me. It was a little bit of imposter syndrome. And as I was trying to find my place, I ran across this Bad with Money podcast. And there was this interview, really early episode with Dr. Brad Klontz. Do you remember that one? back in the day. Yeah. And it clicked for me. Oh my gosh. I didn't realize that this was something that, you know, mental health professionals, and in particular people trained in relationships, could actually do and could actually offer, which, you know, brings me through to that point about how financial therapy is a little bit of a weird world. It is a world where, yes, there are financial professionals who are giving financial advice with the psychology of money in mind, but it also is a world where psychologists, marriage and family therapists, social workers are bringing their world to an awareness of money problems and issues mm-hmm. that come up between people. And so if you, for folks looking for a financial therapist, kind of have in mind, what type of financial therapist do you want? Are you looking for investment decisions and financial advice that's understanding of the psychology of money? Then look at what degree and training your financial therapist has, because they can call themselves a financial therapist with, you know, with training on finances. But then if you're looking for relationship help or counseling with money in mind and the goal of working on your money relationships, look at the training and see, do they have an actual mental health license? That's kind of my guide when I talk to people about the field of financial therapy, because it's a little bit of Wild West, I mean, yeah. to be honest.
Yeah, Brad was one of our early interviews. It's funny because my old therapist, who I was with for a long time, but I just had to switch because I needed someone with a specialty in autism. But my old therapist, I was recommended her by someone who was seeing her for financial anxiety. And at the time, I didn't really understand what that was. And I was going to her for bipolar disorder and a bunch of other things. But I remember my friend who recommended me specifically saying it was for financial anxiety on her end. And I was like, huh, that's interesting and strange. And because I don't think she was a particular financial like specialist. I think she was just like helping with anxiety. But, you know, it makes a lot of sense now for me how much trauma and how much like depression and stress comes from money stuff, particularly childhood, particularly under the death cult that we call capitalism. You know, things that are sort of normalized are actually like pretty bad for you mentally. And I would argue physically as well.
And relationally, right?
Yes.
Like wreaking havoc on our relationships. You're arguing about this stuff and you don't even realize how much underneath of what you're actually arguing about. And you have these relationships that just get really in a lot of mess because they are avoiding talking about money. Mm-hmm. Because the financial anxiety that they have, it can get really scary. And what I see happen is these couples come in and they know that there's something about money that they can't talk about. And all of a sudden, yes, we do some pragmatic budgety stuff, but we mainly work on, you know, what were the money messages you got from childhood, from culture, from society? And when I say childhood, I don't mean your family only. I mean your friends, the TV that you consumed, now, you know, the TikTok you consume, all that stuff. What did you get? What were your money messages? What are the money messages that were good and that you want to keep? What are some money messages that are pretty bad and that you know that you have that you kind of want to get rid of? And then doing that with your partner is huge. Going through that and examining your values and virtues around money and how we do money is absolutely beautiful. And a lot of couples haven't even thought about doing that.
I was going to say, so you get a degree in marriage and family therapy. How much financial then when you decide to do financial therapy, how much financial research and information do you have to do?
Yeah, great question. So I'll back up a little bit and specify how marriage and family therapists are different from other licenses, if that's okay. So I'm also a professor of family therapy at Our Lady of the Lake University, Houston. If anyone wants to check out that campus, we have a lot of fun. But one of the things about training marriage and family therapists is that we see things from a systemic lens, right? Compared to maybe psychologists or social work or professional counselor training, they really look more at working with individuals. But for marriage and family therapists, we look at everyone within a context, everyone within a system. Family does not mean blood, right? Right. Family means who's helping you do you. who builds Gabe, right? Who makes up Gabe? And so we are the only license that requires relational training hours, right? So we're the only license that requires you to see more than one person in the room, which requires a different skill set. When you're trying to set one goal with one individual, that's one way of working. But if you're trying to set a goal and there's two people in the room and they have opposite goals, it requires a really different skill set.
Yeah.
And so that's that relational training that marriage family therapists get. And so to become a financial therapist, you essentially need to bring that relational training to the system of money. Now, one clarification I make on my website is I am not a certified financial planner. I am not. I still have clients who say, hey, how do I invest XYZ? I say, I have ideas about that, but my ideas are not worthy to be expressed here. So I refer out. I have trusted fiduciary financial planners that I refer to for that because I don't. To me, that's kind of a dual relationship. So in therapy land, dual relationship is something that you really want to avoid. It's kind of sort of similar to the concept of a conflict of interest, right? So examples of dual relationship would be, you know, someone who I'm a friend and I'm a therapist. You can't do that, right? I wouldn't be someone's financial advisor and their therapist.
Right.
There's a conflict there. That's weird. I can't really be their therapist and I don't have the training to be a financial planner. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to help people in that way. And so keeping those lines really clear and distinct are helpful. And for financial planners to know, ooh, we're going a little bit too much into therapy, let me refer you to a therapist.
Yeah.
And for therapists to know, ooh, we're going a little bit too much into financial planning, let me refer you to a planner. It's knowing your lane. And to be fair, the boundaries can be a little ambiguous sometimes, but that's where you go in and you lean on your expertise and you know when that line is going to be crossed.
Managing my finances is incredibly stressful and time-consuming. I'm sure you guys know. You've been with me on this journey. You know how many finance apps I've tried. You know how much they haven't worked for me. And I'm always on the hunt for a finance app that fits my life. And then I tried Monarch. It is so easy to use with powerful features, collaboration tools, intuitive design, personalization, constant product improvements. I really value an app that allows me to do all of this without confusion. And especially important to me is intuitive design and the ability to personalize, because clearly finance is not one size fits all. Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, collaborate on your budget, and get insights on your cash flow and recurring transactions. It's the easiest way to manage your household finances. Are you saving for a down payment, a wedding, a dream vacation? Monarch makes it so easy to help you reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Have you been frustrated with personal finance apps that are cluttered with ads, difficult to use, rarely updated? So was Monarch. They built a new kind of personal finance app that's intuitive and powerful and ad-free and constantly improving based on customer feedback. Experience a personal finance app that prioritizes the user experience above all else. Monarch is the top-rated, all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/badmoney. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Plus, there's ad-free privacy you can trust. We will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/badmoney. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/badmoney for your extended 30-day free trial. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything is more expensive these days when you're running a business, and you would be wise to find proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time. The fact that you are able to reduce your IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud is incredible. And the ability to access your cloud financial system from anywhere saves you so much time and stress. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/badwithmoney. 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 We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a new candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy. It would be so much easier if I was looking for someone to help me with sweetening audio, or let's say someone to run my merch shop, or all the little things that go into running a podcast. Usually something like that would be so slow and overwhelming. And honestly, I wish I had used Indeed, and I will use Indeed in the future. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Just go to Indeed.com/badwithmoney right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. How do you start with the budgeting of it? Do you sit down and say to them, like, you're not prescribing anything. You're just sort of saying what, like, how do you, without prescribing or giving like financial advice, because I could see being like, you need to budget and here's how you do that. And then also going into what does this emotionally bring up for you? Like, is that kind of how you do it?
Yeah. So I don't like you just said, saying do a budget is not really deep right. financial advice. So I feel really comfortable giving that advice, you know? So I do, and I give them a variety of tools. They choose which ones they're more comfortable with. If some folks love the apps and they do the apps, other folks hate the apps and they want to do Excel, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Whatever way you guys want to do it is fine. But it's all about more what you were saying of accounting for everything, accounting for the spending. And really what I really focus on is the discretionary spending. Because I mean, okay, for the most part, our expenses can be pretty fixed. You have rent, mortgage, car payments, student loan. Groceries tends to be pretty fixed, although it might fluctuate yeah. month to month a little bit. But that tends to be fixed. Where we have the most flexibility of changing our spending is in our YOLO, like go to hell fun money. And so that's what we really spend a lot of time processing, is how they can figure out what a set amount looks like per month, how they can track that spending. I've gotten to get a little bit old school about my recommendation on this. I used to be a little bit more flexible, but like, oh yeah, do whatever you want. But a lot of my couples have found that just switching to a debit card for each person and saying it's kind of like a bill you pay. Once they figure out their number of what each person gets per month, and generally I recommend that number be the same regardless of who's bringing in more income, because if you're making more, so you get more discretionary spending, and I'm making less because I've taken a nonprofit job, well, that's going to build a lot of resentment. So
yeah,
for the most part, right, I recommend the same discretionary amount.
And also probably more spending because you're like, oh, I want to, you know what, I'll cover you.
Which is so condescending, right?
Yeah. Right. But also, I mean, even if it's nice, it's sort of like, okay, you're covering me. So then it doesn't really change the spending.
Thank you. Thank you. Precisely. And then how do you track that? Right. So they get their discretionary spending and then they just put it on a debit card. And then it's there, and then you spend it, and then it's gone, and then you wait for the next payment to come through, right? But that's really that. It sounds like a very straightforward, like objective process. That process is wrought with beautiful emotion and beautiful meaning for the couple, right? Trying to decide what's discretionary, right?
Like what do you mean?
Yeah. Well, I just had a conversation this morning with, you know, talking about gender issues that come up. Mm-hmm. And in general, for my heterosexual couples, there tends to be this tension between the man and the woman about, for women in our society, it costs more.
Yeah.
It costs more to be presentable and acceptable to the outside world.
Yeah.
And generally for men, it costs less. And so there's this kind of gender bias that we do talk about, and we say, hey, maybe there should be a line item to kind of account for this gender bias where, you know, where she doesn't feel to blame or villainized for literally having to go get her hair dyed. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, like sometimes we do some work on, well, let's deconstruct that.
Yeah.
Do you have to get your hair dyed?
Do you like it? Or is it just something that you're stressed about?
There we go. Right. Yeah. Do you actually want to be doing this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because sometimes with therapy, the people who need to be there the least are not the people that go. So, or like another, the people that need it the most are not the people that go. Like the people that need it the least are who show up at your door in some ways.
It's interesting. I think for couples therapy, though,
they're at their wit's end.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get the, you know, the emails at like 1:30 in the morning after, you know, they've been fighting all night and they're like, I need help with this. And so they're Googling feverishly trying to find help. So I think generally I wish there's no way to do this. I wish that it was like requirement to go to couples therapy before you had any court proceedings for getting married. We do that for driver's licenses. Why don't we do that for marriage licenses? I don't know. But
people would just be like, this is big government trying to keep us, whatever. But like, you know, in synagogues and churches, and I don't know about mosques, but I assume before you get married, you do have counseling with your clergy. Like that is a thing that is required. So like, or, you know, I don't know if you get married in a religion. So like, you're not far off.
Right. There's some ancient wisdom that we might want to use here. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
When they're coming to you, like what is the top problem, or what is the top, you look at what they're doing and you're like, oh, I see where this all started.
Yeah. It varies. I would say the number one thing people say is financial communication. We don't communicate about finances. And then you get into it. And like a step underneath it is a lot of like financial infidelity.
Ooh, say what that is.
Yeah. Financial infidelity is essentially lying about income or spending. And I do want to have a little caveat here before we go into this, that sometimes lying about income or spending, it might be because of an abusive situation. Mm-hmm. So I'm not talking about those folks, right? Those folks, if anyone needs help, please check out the abuse hotline. They did a study and they showed that in abuse cases, that financial abuse was also present in about like 90%.
Yeah, we've talked to people about financial abuse here. It's like deeply part of it and not talked about enough.
Absolutely. So when I say financial fidelity and lying about money or lying about saving, if you're trying to save away a fund to get away from that relationship, I am not talking about that. So I just want to make that very clear before we get into it. But, you know, barring that, there's a lot of folks who they lie about spending, like they take out a credit card and they don't tell the other person. And they think, oh, I'm going to be able to pay it off myself. And then all of a sudden something happens and they can't. Mm-hmm. And so they don't say anything. And it's this huge shame spiral that hides the spending and then compounds the spending, right? Because once they have, you know, this expense on the credit card, okay, well, they have to kind of keep adding to the credit card. And then the debt just surmounts. And then invariably the other person finds it. And the emotions behind finding that debt are the same, if not more intense, than finding out someone has been having sex with someone else, right? It feels just as violating. It feels just as traumatic. Likewise, some people hide money, right? Some of the reasons why they hide money is like a bonus or a raise or something, is because they don't trust the other person. And they say, oh, that person's just going to spend this. So I'm going to save it so that to protect us, right? They have it. They do this under the intention of protecting the household or the relationship from the spending, to save it for a rainy day fund. Both ways, though, of the financial infidelity, hiding the spending or hiding the saving, really denotes that you don't trust the other person with this information.
Yeah.
And why, right? Yeah. What's keeping you from opening?
I mean, in my mind, I'm not a therapist, so I'm like, probably incompatibility. Nobody comes to you to hear like, yeah, you should probably break up.
No, I mean, I don't know. So it's
really wrong. Funny. I know that I'm wrong.
No. But it's cool that you say that though, because I don't know what it is. But I find that like with like my heterosexual couples, with my queer couples, with the, like, so this is like across the board, I have found that there tends to be a YOLO person, carpe diem, and there tends to be a frugal McDougal, right?
Yeah.
And somehow they always hook up.
I know.
But isn't that, I feel like there is like universal wisdom in that of like, they need each other.
Yeah, probably.
Right? They need each other. So I think that, you know, the whole opposites attract thing, it kind of works if you can find a way to have some boundaries.
Yeah.
And that's what that discretionary spending helps so much. Because, okay. So you get your discretionary spending. And let's say it's like, I don't know, $700 a month of fun money that you each get to spend on whatever, right?
Yeah.
That lets the spendy person have a limit. Okay. I know what I'm supposed to go to. A lot of times they're spendy because they just have never been given a number.
Right.
And once they get the number, they're fine. They feel safe to spend. Mm-hmm. Likewise, the more frugal one who's got financial anxiety and is scared of spending money, they have freedom to spend, right? And for years, they may have never spent anything because they knew they had to make up for the other person's spendiness.
Right.
And so it liberates both of them to have more fun, right?
Right. Gives you a boundary.
Totally. Gives you a boundary. Yeah.
I liked the part of your email where you were talking about how answering the question, what is the flow of money like in the household, like is positive. It allows you to discuss hopes and dreams. So let's take on a little bit of a positive note. In what way does this, you know, I know it seems so painful and horrible and boring, but like in what ways does it open stuff up for you as a couple?
Yeah. Well, so like, a lot of, and this is part of my philosophy that I teach my students, my philosophy that I bring into the therapy room. And I try to bring this philosophy to life too. It's hard, but it changes your world if you can. So it's that strengths-based approach where you're looking at hope rather than hurt.
Okay.
And time and time again, if you go to a therapy that's going to look at your deficiencies and what you have wrong with you, that stuff's helpful. It gives a label to what's going on, but the work needs to be done from a hope-based lens, especially with budgeting. Okay. we approach budgeting in our culture as a punishment.
Yeah.
You hear people say like, oh, I can't eat that cake. I'm on a diet. Same thing with budget. I can't buy that. I'm on a budget. Mm-hmm. That's both of those are really pathological. It's a pathological approach to food and diet culture. And it's a pathological approach to budgeting and like this weird, like restrictive money culture we're in. The answer should never be no. It should be not yet. Not this month. Let me save up my discretionary and buy this bag when I have saved up the money. Or, you know what? No, we can't go to the restaurant this month, but in 1 week we get our discretionary again. Let's go in a week. That hopes and dreams conversation is essentially a way where you get to talk about what you want to be doing in life. So many people get together, they start their life, they start their world, and then they never have the conversation about what the point of it is. Mm-hmm. We get real existential real quick. But like, what's the point of your existence? And like, ooh, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And great. Now that y'all have talked about that, how are you spending to reflect that? Right.
Right. Right. We've talked about that a lot where it's like, how are you taking a second to think before buying something? Is how are you spending that in a way that makes sense to further your life in some way? Which is like hard because we have everything at a click. We have everything like very available. But I like the idea of being like, oh, you know, I want to go to this restaurant. Well, we can go in a week when we have this, or longer term, right? You're like, okay, well, I only have $700 a month. What if I spend $600? I put that other $100 away. Then we can go to Key West or whatever.
Precisely. Precisely. Right. And I think that, you know, it can feel so much more in your control. And I love what you just said about this tidal wave of spending that we have hitting us constantly. And that's where having that boundary comes in as so nice of, you know, hey, saw this cute shirt on Insta. Mm-hmm. Okay, click, click. Oh, it's $30. Yeah, I really like it. I'm going to get it. It's worth it to me. Or, you know what? I only have like $100 left this month and I'm going to lunch on Wednesday with my friend. I'm going to hold off on this. I don't know if I actually want this, right?
Hey guys, Gabe Dunn here. I just wanted to let you guys know that I have a Patreon at patreon.com/GabeSDunn. And on that Patreon, I'm going to start doing live hangs with everyone who is a patron. So if you want to join the Patreon, you can get all these episodes ad-free, videos of our mailbag episodes, extra writing from me, blogs, fiction, other stuff, things that I'm thinking about with regards to money and personal stories, and also now live hangs with me on Zoom once a month. So join the Patreon. And if you're not a member of the Discord, hop on over to the Discord. That's free. The link will be in the description. It's so fun. So many of you guys talk over there. It's like truly popping off. And if you're on the Discord, I would love to see you in the live hang so I get to put a face to a name. So yeah, please join patreon.com/GabeSDunn and come hang out with me. I love to track progress. As you guys know from listening to this show, I'm constantly tracking my progress. What have we done so far in 2024? And spring is in full bloom. Are your finances blooming too? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, it's easy to start building credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments with no annual fees or interest. And if your credit scores grow, so could your opportunities for lower rates on loans like for a car or a home. You can use it everywhere Visa credit cards are accepted. That's right, you can build your credit using your own money. Get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. With a qualifying direct deposit, you can get access to your money sooner. Fee-free overdraft with SpotMe. Overdraft up to $200 without fees with SpotMe when you set up a qualified direct deposit. Just set up a qualifying direct deposit, sign up for SpotMe, and Chime will spot you up to your limit when you make a credit card purchase or cash withdrawal that exceeds your balance. Access 60,000 plus fee-free ATMs. That's more than the top three national banks combined. Easily find one near you with the Chime app. Send and receive money. Use Chime to pay anyone, Chime members or not, and cash out your money fee-free. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started at chime.com/badmoney. That's chime.com/badmoney. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A., members FDIC. Spot me, eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, it's been interesting because of the writer's strike. I've been on EBT for a while and they give you a certain amount of money per month. And that's actually been very interesting for me because now I'm walking around the store, like looking at what do I actually use, looking at what would make the most sense. Like if, oh, there's a sale here. Oh, this, oh, that, which like I used to do when I had no money, like, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago. When I would go through these lean times, but it wasn't like consistent per month where I like know that I only have that. So I'm like thinking about it so much more. And it hasn't felt bad. Like it hasn't felt negative to me. It's felt like, okay, once it's coming out of something that's budgeted, it feels like safe and good, which I don't really know how to explain. You did a good job explaining it. But it does feel funny to be like, I had like $4 left and I was like, I'm going to get this salad from the grocery store. And I went and I got the salad and it was $9 total. And I only paid $5 for it. And then when I got home, I was like, I got a whole dinner for $5. Like, I was like thrilled about it.
Right. Right. It shifts the way that you experience money. I think it's really cool, all the different options and ways that we have of spending money these days, and brings up a lot of the philosophy of money of like, it used to be goats and chickens, and then it was gold, yeah. And then it was paper, and now it's just pixels on a screen.
Yeah.
It's weird, but at the end of the day, I think having all these spending options is similar to how we have all these dating options now.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
It's also not that different from, you know, I see people on TikTok doing like girl math. If money's in my Venmo account, it's not real. And I'm like, yes, but think of it as you put, because I've been talking to some of the fans on the Discord for this show. And I was saying like, do you think it's a good idea maybe to put money into a Venmo account? And then that's only the only place I can spend discretionary funds, which would be the same as putting out a bank. It's exactly what you're talking about. It's just me being like, haha, girl math, this money isn't real. But like that, you're saying it as a joke or like something derogatory, but it actually does make sense.
Yeah. Well, and then it, you know, it's, you know, we're treating it like Monopoly money, but it's real money.
Yeah.
That you had to actually work for. And so, yeah.
But just putting it, it's just so mentally putting it somewhere else changes the way that you think about it mentally, whether that's in another account, whether that's in your play money, actual bank account, whether it's in Cash App, like whatever it is, for some reason, psychologically, you go, oh, I don't have to worry because the real money is somewhere else. This is just the money I've decided is fake money.
Right. And like, you know, what's the like the old school advice of like, put it on an envelope, print, get the cash out, right? Like a similar concept updated to today's tech, right? I have a love-hate relationship with Dave Ramsey, but like that was one of that, okay, like that concept.
God, it's just so, one, it's so hard to be in a relationship. And then two, it's so hard to be in a relationship with money involved. And I say what you want about Love is Blind, but I do enjoy that there has been this element now of asking about financial situations and that when they get out of the pods, you know, there's like financial someone not being truthful about a credit score and someone way overreacting about that. But in my opinion, but, you know, like all of this suddenly comes out is like, I own my home. Oh, I guess you'd move in with me. Like they're having that conversation like 2 weeks in, which is also, you know, mentally, who knows, probably too much, but some of the couples make it. But I mean, when do you think people should start talking about this?
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually just did an interview for Vox like a couple of weeks ago, just hit about this exact topic, right? Of when do you talk about money? At what stage and what element? Because a lot of people...
I'm so damaged. I'm like right away. Yeah. I'm like coming off of my divorce. I'm like newly single. I'm like literally on Grindr. Like right. Before you even meet. Like I'm so damaged right now.
They have an app now that takes into account your credit score when matching you. I will find it.
It's so awful. And like, I understand that there's like, it's so bad and so classist and racist and blah, blah, blah. And that's why I'm not on Raya, because like Raya's for celebs or whatever. And like, I find it so annoying. Yeah. But yeah, like, yeah, I'm like in a place of like, trust no one. And like, I need to see everything you've got.
I want to encourage that mentality and boundary it, even in really healthy. I would say that the majority of my couples come to me and it's so interesting. They're like, we love each other. Love this person. Would never have them not in my world. This is the one thing we fight about.
Yeah.
Like, and it feels so damn lucky to be there and have that conversation with them. Because once we move that out of the way, either other stuff comes up or they're good. And then they stop and then they check in with me like quarterly or never, like whatever. It's really cool to see when you move this out of the way. Some people, they're like, oh, I wish we had come to you 15 years ago, right? They're just like, I had no idea that this could be fixed. I'm with you. The earlier, the better. earlier, the better. We're having these conversations. Maybe not on Grindr. The first date. But
I'm just saying it's one of the things that I think people don't realize is so... They're like, oh, that's so shallow. It's not.
It's not. It's very deep. It's very deep. Now, let me caveat that.
Yeah.
It is shallow AF to, I don't know, judge someone's character.
Right.
Or their heart based upon their income. And you know what? I see a lot of that shit happening on those dating apps. Okay.
Yeah.
I see a lot of that judgment. Now, it is not shallow to... If you've got someone who you really like and you think is a great person, to say, okay, like, what's your money story?
Yeah.
What's your relationship with money? Again, going back to that hopes and dreams conversation, don't approach it with fear. Approach it with hope of like, what's your world like around money?
What's your
money?
Bucket list? What would you want to do? Like, because all of a sudden, even that could... you know, come down to incompatibilities. People break up because of being long distance. What if someone really wants to buy a house and the other person's like, that's not on my list. Or I really want to have kids. That's not on my list. Or,
right.
You know, for me, if I had extra money, oh, I would travel. The other person's like, if I had extra money, I would build a pool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's stuff that comes down to lifestyle. It's not necessarily like you need to be rich or I need to be rich. It's like, oh, you would get in a van and go camping for, you know, a year and we would travel. I would do that too. I don't really care about money. Like that.
Right, right. And having those conversations about hopes and dreams, then of course trickles down into, okay, well, if your hopes and dream is to, I don't know, travel for 3 months of the year, but mm-hmm. you aren't on a career path that would allow for that. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, what can we do in our lives to change it? It's mm-hmm. not necessarily you like the mountains, I like the beach, we need to mm-hmm. break up. No, but it's how can we, or do we want to change our lives to where they would align more? And then that question comes into, you know, well, because relationships are supposed to change us.
Okay, right? What do you mean?
In most like, you know, religious ceremonies, right? There's like vows that you take.
Mm-hmm.
If it were easy, we wouldn't take vows. We wouldn't have to make promises.
Right.
It would just be done, right?
Right.
But we have to make promises and take vows because it's hard. But it's just like becoming a butterfly, right? You're in the cocoon, you're in there, and it's hard to discern, okay, is this toxic and unhealthy and killing me?
Right.
Or is it transforming me?
Yeah.
It's really hard to know the difference sometimes. And that's where couples therapy can come in and help for sure. But letting it transform you. Some of the couples that have come in doing the financial therapy, they literally are like, I would have never thought to do any of this different stuff with spending. I don't like talking about money. I don't want to think about money, but me thinking about it, me changing a little bit of who I was, I guess, is helping me become who I really want to be. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, relationships are supposed to transform you. So, you know, maybe the kid conversation is huge. I have a lot of folks who come to me discerning, you know, do they want to become parents or not? I've seen both ways be really transformative. Someone who decides, hey, parenting isn't the path I want to go down. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, what are we living our life for now then? Mm-hmm. And well, I'm living my life for meaningful experiences, connection with community and all this stuff. Or someone who's like, oh my God, kids sound awful too. Yeah. You know what? Maybe that's something I really want to do. And so, yeah, letting relationships transform you in a healthy way.
Yeah, I love that. I think like people don't take into account, like, your partner is not supposed to make your life harder. So even if you disagree about money, even if this is the only thing you fight about, you need to fight fair. You need to fight with kindness and compassion. You need to fight with assumptions that the other person has good intentions. You're not enemies, you're a team. And you need to fighting about money in a way that both people feel like they can say their piece. Because I've been in relationships where it's like, well, the only thing we fight about is this. And it's like, okay, the only thing you fight about is this one thing. How often is that happening? And what happens when you do fight? Money comes down to sometimes like control. There's so many people, I read Reddit religiously, and there's so many people on Reddit who are like, I can't leave my partner because of money. They get into these situations. Unfortunately, like, it's cheaper to live with someone than it is to not. Like, access to reproductive care, like all this stuff, yep. Like just keeps you trapped in these things. And divorce is expensive. I mean, look, I got out of this relationship, decimated my finances. Am I free? Yeah. I'm free. But, you know, did I get tuition at the school of hard knocks? Yeah. Like I paid that. Yeah. So it is, and similar to all other therapy, we've talked about it a lot on this show. You can't bring an abusive partner to therapy. You just can't.
Right.
So you have to think about when you go to a financial therapist, you have to think about, is this something that is going to be solved by this or by this person because we're coming at it this way? Or is this something I'm dragging this person to? They mm-hmm. are telling, as soon as we sit down with the therapist, they're doing nothing but being unkind to me. Like, what is actually happening? Because money can be used as such a tool in relationships to trap someone or to make someone out to be the bad guy. And, you know, I don't want people to think, oh, I'll just do this. I don't know. I don't want people to think that it's not indicative of other things and that, you know, I think it's giving you clues. Like how someone responds to money stuff really early on gives you clues. Love bombing. Are they insisting on paying for everything? Are they like keeping all these things as like red flags?
And asking about it.
Yeah.
Asking about it. Saying, hey, I noticed that you always pick up the tab. And what's that like for you?
Yeah.
What's that like for you? Like, what would ask open-ended questions is a nice, you know, who, what, where, when, why, how, right? What's that like for you? Who taught you that? Mm-hmm. You know, when did you start doing that? Like asking questions and seeing how they respond.
Yeah.
Do they get defensive and pissed off? Mm-hmm. Or are they saying, oh, I don't know. I've just always done that. Like, like that can be a great conversational tool to get to know somebody. And you don't have to, when you're trying to understand someone's relationship with money, you don't have to like sit them down with a checklist per se, right? You can just ask them questions like that.
And if they say, hey, you talk about money too much. Well, great. We're incompatible.
Right. Or like, what's too much?
Yeah.
Like, what's a comfort level for you of like, a comfortable conversation about money or why is it hard for you to talk about money? Right. Mm-hmm. Those sort of questions. And And yeah, I think that having an awareness as well of what you said earlier was really important of at what point are we just not going, at what point do we need to not be commingling our assets or our lives?
Yeah.
And that's a decision that no therapist can tell you. Any therapist who tells you to stay together or to get divorced is not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Mm. They're supposed to be asking, how do we understand what you guys want? Mm-hmm. How do we have a conversation that will help y'all answer that question? Mm-hmm. What do y'all need to know about each other to make that decision? Right. Mm-hmm. That's the questions that you should be asking the financial therapy. And yes, a lot of it can come from fear mm-hmm. and anxiety. And once you express those fears, express those anxieties, you see how the other person responds, mm-hmm. right? And see if they respond in a trustworthy way.
They'll say on these reality shows that I watch and also in my own life, they'll say, oh, we just went through so much and it's so hard and we're fighting about money and we just like fighting about anything, but let's say fighting about money and we went through so much and we've come out the other side or whatever. And I want to say, is what you went through a result of the world is unfair, your job underpays you, something where it was out of your control as a couple, or it was something that was existing around you, or is the stuff you're overcoming that person being mean to you? Do you know what I mean? Like
right.
when couples are like, right. we really went through it and we came out the other side. I'm like, but what was the problem? Something you were working on together that was sort of happening, or was the problem like you don't like each other?
Well, and to be fair, so.
No, please be fair. I'm very cynical now.
No, totally, totally. And I love the cynicism, right? But I think it's also healthy, right? But I think that like, okay, this is my wounded healer confession time. Here we go.
Yeah.
So another part of why I got into financial therapy is because I had extreme financial anxiety that was unidentified in my relationship.
Yeah.
I remember my husband and I had been married for like 2 weeks and he was starting law school and I was still in grad school. And I was making like 28 grand as a research assistant at a cancer hospital.
Oh, wow. And that's definitely not a job that we need to pay people for.
Oh, yeah. Don't even get me started.
Yeah.
We completely work on the backs of grad students. Our society is indebted to them. And so I came home and there was like, I don't know, a burger and a drink mm-hmm. on the table. And I was like, it wasn't even the burger. It was the drink. I was like, we have drinks at home. How could you do this? I felt so extremely betrayed that he had bought a soda. Mm-hmm. And it was then that I realized, oh my God, I have a bit of a problem here.
Yeah.
And we just very different views of money, very different spending. We went to couples therapy, not a financial therapist, but a good couples therapist, a licensed marriage family therapist. And she helped me realize how when I would say these things, he was experiencing them as unkind and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
But it was like through that process, but I was able to change.
Yeah.
If you have a person who maybe doesn't know how much they're hurting you, it happens. But once they know, if they continue to like,
yes,
it's hard to change. It takes time. But if they continue to not try at all and just continue to hurt you, mm-hmm. Okay. Then maybe we need to talk about is separation needed? But give them the chance. Give them a fighting chance of saying like, hey, listen, I don't know if you know this, but this is how I experience. And my poor husband, he didn't grow up talking about feelings very much.
So
he didn't know how to say, hey, that hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it was hurting him until he went to couples counseling. And
well, couples therapy, there you go. With both people having the intention of not hurting the other one.
Exactly. And that's that piece. Now, how to screen for that? Oi.
Yeah.
We need to make a questionnaire. Yeah.
I do not know. I am very much, I think as you're talking, right? And sometimes this is not a bad thing, but like everything you're talking about in terms of having someone look at me buying a drink and have a thought on it, I don't want them.
Right.
I don't want that.
Right.
And
yeah.
And so it's kind of this fun thing to be like, how do you, you know, okay, I want to impart here, I guess, that like be in a relationship or don't. Like,
and like you want to be in a relationship with someone who's already done that work. So like
okay, that's a different perspective.
My relationship helped me transform, helped me change, and then it helped him change too. But you want to be in a relationship with someone who's already done that work, right? Yeah, we all have shit about money that we need to work out. And you, what you're wanting is someone who has already learned those lessons, right? Yeah.
Not just about money, but just in general. And I have to learn. I have to learn on my own. That's the big thing, is that I have stuff I have to learn on my own. I mean, it's really hard. Money is like the number one, I think, reason people get divorced, right?
In the first 7 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, just intimacy is hard in general. But yeah. I think like people, I think it's something to, do you think there's something to taking money as just a neutral thing and trying to take off the judgment and baggage or whatever about it and just approaching it like this is a number?
Yeah, it's so you reminded me of a Martin Luther King Jr. quote. He said one time, time is neutral. It's what you do with it that matters.
Oh.
And I take that same approach to money. Money is neutral. It's what you do with it that matters. And so I really think that how you talk about it, let's use it as a tool of respect and love and dream fulfillment. Let's not use it as a way to judge and degradate each other.
Right? Yeah. Sometimes people, I mess up and people will say, will be mad. And then they'll say, why did you do that? And my answer is, I don't freaking know, man. Like if someone was like, hey, why did you, you know, if someone was mad at me, let's say hypothetically, and they were like, you spent $200 over budget. Why did you do that? I'm like, because I don't know. I don't know. And it's hard to sit down with another person and be like, why did I do that?
Right. And so like, this is like the system that I tell folks, like, I want y'all to create a system where we can hold each other accountable without crucifying.
Yes. The other person. Or being the martyr.
Right. Thank you. Yes. Absolutely.
So what are the top things you would recommend? Like what do you like hope every couple is hearing and you're like, please do this and please listen to me?
Yes, please have a prospective budget meeting every year. Prospective, where you are planning the year rather than just looking at what you did last year. Because looking at what you did last year, okay, helpful-ish, but not really. Not if you stop there. Plan your year out. Get a nice beverage of choice, tea, wine, margarita, whatever. Sit down together. Have your hopes and dreams conversation because your hopes and dreams change every year, right? Mm. Have your hopes and dreams conversation and then plot out your spending for the year. And then when you're done plotting out that spending, set up a tracking mechanism. It can be, there's beautiful apps now if you're an app person, or you can do the old school, just kind of having a reconciliation meeting every month. Oh. That's a little cumbersome. Automated if you can, as much as possible, is my opinion, but some people like doing that. So prospective budget planning together, not just one person. And then also the discretionary spending amount helps a ton because it creates a lot of transparency and it keeps you, all the things, it keeps you from spending unintentionally. Mm-hmm. And those are the two biggest things. If every relationship could do that, oh my gosh, there would be so much more thriving in relationships, I think, if we did that.
How do you deal with like disappointment or something bad happens in an illness, getting fired? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you deal with that?
You know, that's where that hopes and dreams conversation, you have it again. In light of the pain, there's still hope. You know, so get this diagnosis. Okay, cool. What's our hopes from here?
Yeah.
What do we want to do with here? Hey, I have a year to live. Great. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Am I taking this, right? Like, I mean, when I see people approach pain in that way, I'm so inspired.
Yeah.
I don't know that I could do it myself, but that's the aspiration, is approach every obstacle as an opportunity in your life and for your relationship, right?
It's just like, you gotta find the person who wants to do this with you. And the idea of having the prospective budget is so nice because you operate from a place that isn't fear. Even like, I mean, yeah, even the people I see who are cutting, who are doing a lot to get out of debt, the couples are doing it together.
I tell my couples all the time, couples that don't fight don't care about each other anymore.
Right? Oh my God.
Like,
well,
like I want you fighting, but I want the fights to become less frequent and less intense and more meaningful.
Yeah, maybe like 10 minutes long or something.
Correct. Yeah. Or like even shorter. It's like, I mean, just something where you fight, but you understand the other person. You're like, okay, cool. We good? Yeah. All right. What did we learn? And then we go from there.
Yeah.
Fights are natural. Fights are fine. But when they're messy and they're unkind, that's when they are not helpful.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
That was very helpful. And also just, you know, I hearing more and more, I'm like, well, I guess I'm not there, which is all right.
And learning about what you want, what your criteria are, and refining them.
I appreciate it. Where can people find you and more about you?
Yeah, fabulous. Thank you. So financialtherapytexas.com is my website. I can only work with folks within the boundaries of Texas, but if you have questions, feel free to email me and I will hook you up with someone in your state.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. And then the Financial Therapy Association is a wonderful place to go as well if you're looking for someone. But feel free to seek me out. I've got a blog there and lots of good stuff for people to use.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bad with Money with Gabe Shane Dunn is a production of Noted Bisexual, produced by Melissa D. Montz and Diamond M. Print Productions, edited by Diane King, post-production sound by Coco Lorenz, and music by Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin, and Jack Dolgen, as sung by Sam Barbera. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.